Thank you. So, for the topic, changing mind, changing life, let me share you some outlines. First outline is the importance of Lojong teaching or practices, and second is to define what Lojong is, and brief history. And then third outline is to focus on essential Lojong teaching. So you will hear today first Lojong teaching on for parting from attachment or clingings. And then at the end we will identify outlines of 7-point mind training, and then we'll have a discussion. But you can always interrupt while I'm sharing you. So the first outline, the importance of Lojong or changing mind, changing life. So first of all, the essential Buddhist teaching and practice is mainly Lojong, or mainly transformation of one's thoughts, transformation of one's afflicted emotions, and transformation of our habitual patterns. So that is a common theme or common focus in Theravadan tradition, in Mahayana Bodhisattva tradition, and also in Vajrayana tradition. So that means Buddhist teaching and practice is based on inner discipline, and especially the inner discipline of mind, thought, emotion, and that includes our habitual behaviors. So that means mind training or Lojong itself is not a unique teaching of Mahayana Bodhisattva, but it is consistently common to all Buddhist teachings. In particular, Lojong teaching is considered as very, very important, essential teaching and practice according to Mahayana Bodhisattva. So let me share you some of the reasons. So first of all, in Buddhist teachings, there is one type of teaching that is called Ganjur. Ganjur teachings are direct teachings of historical Buddha. There are about more than 100 Tibetan woodblock texts. So that is the original classical teachings or references. Next to that, There's another teaching called Denjur. Denjur are teachings that are composed by Indian Buddhist scholars, beginning from Nagarjuna, who was born after 400 years when Buddha passed away. So after the 400 years of passing away of Buddha, until 7th-8th century, there were many Indian Buddhist scholars who actually wrote commentaries. So these commentaries total more than 200. So when Buddhism was introduced in Tibet, so there is an emphasis on learning Buddhist teaching and practice based on these two main sources: Ganjuru, that is direct teaching, and Denjuru, that are commentaries. So then, starting from 7th or 8th century, Tibetan Buddhist scholars, practitioners, follow the same tradition of studying Ganjur and Denjur. But in 10th century, starting from Indian Buddhist scholar, meditator, and practitioner Adisha introduced Lojong teaching. Although Lojong is common, but this particular Lojong teaching that you are going to hear and will be hearing for the next two public talks. So Lojong teaching, this particular Lojong teaching is called Damga in Tibetan language. So sometimes that is translated as pith instruction, and I'm not sure what pith exactly means in English. But Lojong teachings are based on one's practice and experience. So Lojong teachings can be called in this category that I call empirical-based teaching and practices. So you hear lots of teachings, concepts, explanations, but then these Lojong teachings are based on practical understanding, and so they are regarded as very, very unique, because this is something sharing our own practice rather what other scholars say or what others think. So that way Lojong is considered as very, very unique, special teaching. The importance of Lojong teaching. First of all, Lojong means mind training in Tibetan, or thought transformation. Just the term thought transformation or mind training implies a very, very positive message, positive understanding. So Lojong means that our mind is flexible, changeable, plastic, transformable. Even sometimes when we form a pattern, we may feel like it's not changing. So that means Lojong teachings are equivalent to modern neuroscience term called neuroplasticity. So same meaning, plasticity. My understanding is that now we understood that our neurons can be regenerated or change based on how we think, how we practice. So practicing Lojong, for example, practicing compassion would change our brain function. So that's very, very good, a helpful example that is consistent with the Buddhist teaching that our mind is changeable. Now, one more point, then I will move to the next. Changing mind seem to be the most important inner discipline that we ever have in our life. Because if we experience physical illness or physical health, then it depends how we perceive and how we view or how we react or respond really affects our physical condition. So therefore, physical experiences are also influenced by our mind. And likewise, any emotion that we experience in our life, especially negative ones, are directly affected by the way how we perceive, or our attitudes, our perception, our view, our reactions. So therefore, if we are able to understand how mind, thought, attitude, perception, our worldview, the way how we change them will also affect our life. So therefore, maybe there is no separate life besides mind and its function and mind's relation to our body, our habits, like that. So, anyhow, that's what I think, why it is important. Now, in terms of Lojong teaching itself, last public talk we discussed about what is Vipassana. So basically, Vipassana is a wisdom. Wisdom that understands reality as it is. Then the question is wisdom enough for us to train our mind? And so the usual answer is that wisdom is important, but the wisdom itself is not enough. Not enough to actualize the transformation that we achieve in our life. So in order to Vipassana or wisdom, we also need Lojong practice. So Lojong in general, in this Bodhisattva teaching, Lojong actually refers to the training of enlightenment thought. or bodhicitta. And particularly, lojong actually also means cultivation of loving kindness and compassion and equanimity. So if you read lojong, like classical textbooks of lojong, primary focus is how to cultivate this altruistic mind or empathy, loving kindness. So once we cultivate these altruistic thoughts or beneficial thoughts, then it naturally brings enlightenment thought or bodhicitta. So when we combine both the vipassana and lojong teaching, then we actually are practicing complete Buddhist teaching, that is union of wisdom and compassion or skillful means. All right. So now, let me share you the first teaching. First, I am going to focus on parting from the four attachments. So, I have learned that although there are many lojong teachings, and we do have lojong teaching study group and practice group, and I noticed that this coming October 6th, from what time?
1 to 3
on Saturday. So we have a continuing lojong practice group, and so please contact Grace, and you will know what we are studying and schedules and locations, everything. Alright, so I have learned from my teacher Kenpo Abe Rinpoche that although there are many lojong teachings, but there are two main teachings of lojong, and one is 7-point mind training that we'll be talking about it today. The second lojong teaching is parting from the four attachments, or four graspings, or four clingings. So now, before I share you what are the fours, this concept that is called in Tibetan Shenpa. Last time, Pema children actually was giving teaching on Shenpa, this particular, which Shenpa is literally it means to cling something, or Shenpa means to get stuck. So it is a similar kind of synonym of attachment. So sometimes translators call it attachment, other times it is called grasping or clinging or maybe craving sometimes. But they are really kind of synonym and same category. So one of the main obstacles, if I talk about the obstacles in our life, and particularly practicing meditation, this concept called Shenpa, clinging, is really the main obstacle. So because of this clinginess or stagnation with whatever experience we have, really restricts and limits our growth, personal growth, personal transformation. So this clinging can be produced by any negative emotions. So although it is synonym to attachment. But if we feel anger or hatred or aversion, it still creates this clinging to whatever the object of our anger, aversion. Usually, aversion and anger is a state of mind that perceives something unpleasant. So therefore, we try to push away. So when we try to push away, then we get stuck. We're trying to push away or trying to control, then we get stuck. At the same time, the attachment is a mental state that perceives something pleasant. So if we perceive something pleasant or some experience as pleasant or object, then naturally we actually don't want to let it go. We want to hold it. So both ways, it creates stagnation. So in our meditation practice, sometimes we have this relaxation experience. So when it happens, you simply notice that it is happening. But if you try to maintain that, then it is a clinginess. Then it is attachment. But then you may ask, does it mean that we cannot cling with or grasp on something? So it seems that clinging on something, that itself is not an obstacle. The main obstacle is automatic clinging, automatic attaching. What it means is attaching something without any awareness. So we need to make the distinction between, for example, fighting with awareness. Okay. So feeling anger versus feeling anger with awareness. Again, we can still debate whether we could have anger when you are aware of anger itself. So at the initial stage in the practice, our practice is simply being aware when the clinging is happening, or when the attachment is happening, when the grasping is happening, and there is no need to do anything, simply really aware and notice, and then go back to the space of awareness or openness. And then it may come again, and then you let it go. So that's in general how this clinging or grasping on something functions in our daily life or meditation practices. So now let me share you the teaching on that. So in this teaching, historically, it is said that one of the five founders, the first founder of Sakya tradition, Sachin Khunga Nyingbo, if you want to know the exact date, 1092 1158. So this This particular founder had a vision of Manjushri. Manjushri is a wisdom deity. Had a direct vision and received this one verse teaching. And so let me read this in English and then I will explain. I'm reciting and giving this teaching to give you some classical teaching as well as some contemporary teaching. So then you are getting complete teaching. Okay. And I mentioned that because I heard that these days in U.S., acupuncture, traditional acupuncture is adapted here in U.S. But then there's some concern that the classical acupuncture might be kind of losing its originality. Because there's a focus on the techniques, but not the theories and the detail. So there's a similar concern in Buddhist teaching and practices that sometimes you get some contemporary teaching and there's no connection with the classical teaching, if classical teaching are the sources. Or the origin teaching, so could be important to know the both. So anyhow, this is the English translation of this one verse. If you have attachment to this life, you are not a religious person. If you have attachment to the samsara or cyclic existence, you do not have renunciation. If you have attachment to your own purpose, you do not have bodhicitta or enlightenment thought. If grasping arises, you do not have view or wisdom. So that's the exact translation. But here is the opposite translation of this. The opposite is actually, if you are not attached, not cling to this life or to this practice, to this experience, you are a religious or spiritual practitioner. If you are not attached, not cling to this particular world or samsara, you do have renunciation. If you are not attached to your own purpose, you do have bodhicitta, enlightenment thought. If grasping does not arise, you do have view and wisdom. Okay, so now let me explain more. So first of all, let me explain what it means religious person, what it means renunciation, what it means bodhicitta, and what it means view or wisdom. So first of all, in Tibetan language, there's a word called chö. Chö means dharma, and chö pa means Dharma practitioner. So I think the translation could say, if you are attached to this life, you are not a Dharma practitioner. Now, but then the Tibetan word chö also related to transformation. So in that case, if you are attached to this life, then your life is not transformed. Okay? The opposite is, if you are not attached to this life, then you are transformed. I guess transformed or transformed individual. Now, this term che is also a spiritual practice. So I am translating this as a spiritual practice. So if we are attached to this life or this experience, this particular tradition, this system, this method, this whatever that is, then we are not a spiritual practitioner. So that means spiritual practitioner is someone who is free from all the attachment. That doesn't mean the person is detached, but a spiritual person actually recognizes when the attachment is happening. Spiritual practitioner knows when someone is clinging to certain experience. Okay, so I had this actually quite strong desire to explore this absolute non-attachment life. And then because I've been thinking and trying to understand and trying to practice, so this is a very intimate conversation. So if I do that, I totally let go everything that I'm connected to. And so that means Nalanda, home, friends. But if I do that, if I let go everything, then it seems that everything comes in. Then I thought, well, how to do that? Then I actually learned that this time I need to have full trust and believe within myself that I would be okay and Nalanda would be okay and the rest of the world would be okay. Doesn't matter whether I exist or not. I just like kind of fly. Then I thought, maybe when we die, that is what going to happen, so why not do it now? So that means living in total present moment and trust that I will get food and water and go wherever I want. And go to the mountains, go to the cities, and go to very, very unusual places. And most importantly, trusting myself and trusting the universe that everything would be fine. So it seems that when we try to identify what is important in our life, we come up with lots of doubts. What happens if I do this? And so it seems that not able to trust and believe ourselves and believe the universe and believe the truth and the reality, not able to go through this process actually kind of interferes us to achieve our personal goal or spiritual goals. But anyhow, I came down more practical ideas. So then I thought, well, why not I come up very, very practical steps? and I'm not sure how much I can continue. So I said, well, then let's start taking bus. So I started that. I just started this week, so I don't mind sharing next time if I couldn't continue. But anyhow, goal is to do once a week, just take bus and see what happens, something different that I have not done maybe for the last 15 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed myself that I was actually very excited before the bus is coming. And I saw the bus is coming. I noticed myself that I was so excited, like felt like a little child. That was very, very strange. But anyhow, so it doesn't mean detachment. It means so as a spiritual practitioner, whoever we identify ourselves, really needs to define and recognize what clinging is. It seems that is really most obstacle. All right, so that is what the concept means, chöpa, meaning spiritual practitioner or a transformed individual. So that first line is general, just general. What is spiritual practitioner? And spiritual practitioner is someone who is able to free from clinginess, free from the attachment, free from grasping on, and able to let come and let go. So basically like our breathing, nothing different, nothing special. Then the second verse, it says, if you are attached to the samsara, then you do not have a renunciation. So in this context, renunciation, renunciation also has some meaning of transformation. So transformation of one's thoughts, one's emotions, is really the genuine renunciation. So there's external renunciation to renounce worldly life, for example, or sometimes actually monastic life, that I did that for a number of reasons. So if you are attached to this samsara, the samsara doesn't mean this world. Samsara actually is a concept of habitual patterns of our thoughts and emotions that go round and round, like a what do you call a water wheel? That is a classic example from more than 2,000 years. Maybe that is how they get their water. So samsara actually doesn't mean the physical world. Samsara means our internal mental and emotional cycle. Okay. So having renunciation also means that the person actually achieved nirvana. So this second verse, if you are attached to this samsara, you are not renunciation. What it means is, if you are attached to this cycle of thoughts and emotion, then you are not transformed, or you have not achieved what I call abiding nirvana. Okay? So that means the second verse actually shows the meaning of Theravadin teaching. The essence of Theravadin teaching is to reduce or release from the cycle, right? And the third line, if you are attached to your own purpose, meaning if you are attached to your own purpose, your own self-centered affairs or self-centered self-centeredness, then you have not developed bodhicitta. So the third verse actually explains the essential teaching of bodhisattva. So bodhisattva teachings are based on altruistic thoughts. So altruistic thoughts should be free from self-centered or self-cherishing attitudes. Now the last one, if grasping arises, you do not have the view or wisdom. So now, that the fourth one is essential teaching of all Buddhist philosophical view or philosophical understanding. So there is lots of debate on Buddhist philosophy in terms of ultimate truth. Some philosophical theory says we have to analyze this object, every object or every experience into the smallest particle to the extent then it will automatically negate grasping onto that object. Okay. So if I have attachment to an object, and let's say I have attachment to this table, and so in order to reduce or transform my attachment to this, if I analyze the very existence of this table and analyze where is table, and so if I go through this thorough analysis based on Buddhist philosophy, then we may actually end up to very, very smallest particle. And then for smallest particle, one may not have the same attachment. Okay? So that is how Buddhist monks or nuns are trained. And let me share you something very funny that I did. For me, it was funny. So one of the Seattle Dharma Center family came to Nepal, and I was with my teacher, Denshin Rinpoche. And so I talked with their son, who had a girlfriend in the U.S. And so he was telling me that he was missing his girlfriend. So I shared this idea. Well, next time if you miss your girlfriend, then you analyze the existence of your girlfriend. Where is your girlfriend? The hair or the head or the body and the finger and then if you still find, then there is a worthwhile to be worried. But if you analyze thoroughly and if you couldn't find from a deepest level, then maybe you don't need to worry. So I said funny because then I realized that actually that is not an appropriate teaching for him, because he really worries. So I was sharing these ideas. So anyhow, I actually regretted to suggest that. And I also suggest some other ways to reduce attachment. So that was very funny. I guess can be related, but it is not a stage-wise, not a relevant, so not a appropriate. Okay. So anyhow, there's other teachings that says the technique is not to follow the reduction model or analytical model. The practice is to recognize one's grasping and reduce the grasping, and then it is okay to have the table and there will not be any grasping. So what it means is the first step is to reduce the clinging and the grasping on something. Reduce that, and then no need to worry whether the object exists or doesn't exist. Okay, all right. So it is important to know the opposite side of this teaching. So the opposite of the original teaching goes like this: if you are non-attached, you are a spiritual practitioner. If you are not attached to the cycle of thoughts and emotion, then you are transformed. And if you are attached to the self-cherishing attitudes, self-cherishing mind, then oneself is not a bodhisattva. And if grasping arises, then there is no philosophical understanding and practice, experience of ultimate reality. Okay, so any question came up, any comments, and also ask any question relevance of this teaching to our daily life. Yes?
I'm glad that you were talking about samsara, because I really did understand from what I have read that it actually meant this life, as you said. And I did not understand, and I understood that if one did not give up all of the attachments and so forth after one died, one would return to samsara, meaning this life. But you are saying that it actually means the concept of letting go. Samsara is the idea of clinging to the things of life. Is that a correct way of...
Say again.
Okay. The way I have read and understood samsara, the Tibetan word samsara.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Sanskrit word, originally.
Originally, yes.
Yeah.
I understood it to mean this world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the...
And...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Then, if a person did not... which is suffering...
Samsara. You mean samsara is suffering?
Yes. Yes. And if one does not realize that and let go of all the grasping, as you call it,
mm-hmm.
of the things of this world,
mm-hmm.
when a person died,
mm-hmm.
they would come back, instead of achieving enlightenment, they would come back
mm-hmm.
to this world or samsara,
mm-hmm.
suffering again.
Yes. So, one of the possible causes of rebirth is understood as self-grasping or clinginess. But let me clarify this first line that says, if you are attached to this life, what it means is, if we are attached to, let's say I'm doing meditation. Now, it has many purpose, but then eventual purpose is, if you are, again, I'm not sure what level we are, but the advanced level, from an advanced level point of view, attachment to this life, meaning doing practices only for this life.
Okay.
Like, for example, I do meditation, and doing meditation is only for health purpose, or only for this kind of narrow or limited purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So the teaching actually encourages to expand one's interests, one's goal. So for me, if we recognize our attachment to something, then it helps us to let go, and letting go actually brings more. So we usually think that if we let it go, then we will not have it again, or this will not happen. But when things come and things go naturally, then it seems actually we become richer, actually, internally. And then internally we become richer in our life, kind of satisfying, like satisfying life. And then even we don't have all the external physical luxurious life, still feel actually contented. So this teaching, non-attachment, doesn't mean not to have attachment, but if we have attach with awareness. That's what it means. So attach with awareness is really different than just having attachment. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Go. Right. I don't want to
okay.
dominate too much.
All right.
But
okay.
I just had one other question. My understanding was that you were mentioning that it was about 400 years after the Buddha died.
Mm-hmm.
There were only about 200 texts.
More than 200, yes.
Okay, I believe that was when the Nalanda Institute in India was first formed.
After that, Nalanda University probably established, but I know that 4th, 5th century Nalanda University was there.
Okay, and then was it a teacher who took the teachings to
mm-hmm.
Tibet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then My understanding is that it expanded, I forget, was it Narvinka Institute or something of that nature, to 2000.
So are you talking...
What I call sutras or teachings.
So you are mentioning the histories then?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
I was just wondering if that, my understanding of those things were...
I think if I say directly, so after passing away of Buddha, after 400 years, then Nagarjuna came. And then the rest of the Indian Buddhist scholars until 10th century. And by that time, Tibetan Buddhism established already and then expand later on by Tibetan scholars and meditators until now. All right, so any other question? Any other questions how to relate to life? Yes.
I'm sorry, I wanted to say did you suggest that the attachment itself is not the root of the problem, provided that I have awareness?
Mm-hmm.
The attachment is there.
Yeah. So I usually understood that almost also, although we talk about present moment experience, what I meant is almost any initial experience are not problem. So initial, let's say there's an anxious situation and I feel anxious. Now that particular anxious is not a problem. But the problem starts when we build and attach around that. And then was, why am I feel anxious? Why me? See, now I am attaching to that. And then that anxious might become more destructive. Okay? But the opposite is there is a initial experience of anxious. And then we simply experience as it is. Whatever that is, without any further evaluation, interpretation, there's no what it means, and simply feel the anxious. But then, second step is always challenging, and that is to return whatever we're doing at that moment. And if we repeat that, then the first one actually becomes conducive factor. The first experience of anxiety or anxious actually helps to increase our coping skills. So if we apply, generalize this same idea with attachment, with anger, and then that would change our life. Okay.
Thank you.
Is that clear?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that means if you do meditation practice, if you are with someone, this time you are completely different. You have a fresh mind. You're able to see this as initial experience. and observe our own reaction that are also reactions, also attachment. And so simply observe those reaction to that initial experience and then go back to whatever you are doing. So that is Lojong practice, one of the Lojong practice. Okay? So, any question?
I have a question.
Yeah.
That is, so you have an experience, the
yeah.
primary experience.
Right.
Whatever that experience is.
Mm-hmm.
And if I let go of that
mm-hmm.
experience,
mm-hmm.
whatever I may have learned in that moment,
mm-hmm.
is there any value in how do I hold on to what I learned in that moment
oh,
or the next moment?
I see. Right. That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
So, more we experience,
mm-hmm.
more we actually store in our consciousness, and that turns to that actually becomes memory. So, anytime when we experience, whether it is positive or negative,
mm-hmm.
it really imprints on our consciousness. Okay? And more importantly, this fresh mind.
Okay.
This fresh mind meaning mind that is free from judgmental thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And this fresh mind is able to see things openly. So more openness we have, more openness, more experience, and that experience actually creates more recollection.
Okay, so I have this experience.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say I have this experience where I encounter something dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't want to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm keeping in my mind, I've made a story to myself, and if I do that, I'm going to make a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
I might endanger myself or somebody else or
mm-hmm.
such. To me, the question has to do with holding on to that experience without it becoming detrimental to maintaining a fresh mind.
Right. So let me share you some other techniques.
Okay.
So let's say you have that thought.
Okay.
That this will bring some danger.
Yeah.
So what if we recognize that thought as simply thought, and it is really thought.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we think, what is going to happen, it is still thought.
Okay.
So then, then it may come again, and we repeat, yes, I'm having this thought.
Yeah.
And then it may come again, and pretty soon, because you have process, so that very thought actually might weaken its strength to come back again.
Well, in mind training.
Uh-huh.
So in mind training.
Yeah.
You are strengthening something to come back again and again.
You are training. Say again, please.
Okay. So, if I'm engaged in mind training.
Yes.
I'm seeking, I'm seeking to change my mind from this way to that way, so I'm still engaged in that action of repeating.
Okay, so there's a two mind training teachings.
Okay.
One mind training teaching is not seeking for change.
Okay.
Okay, that's the first one I share with you. Simply noticing thoughts, imaginations, dreams as thoughts, imagination, and dreams itself actually changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is able to see things as it is and able to accept what is happening. The other one, changing this thought and that thought, and there is. So let me then share you outline for our next public talk. So next public talk, we will be focusing on 7-point mind training. And 7-point mind training has 7 points or 7 outlines. And the first one is practicing preliminary or practicing the foundation. Foundation here means we'll be talking about motivators. What will motivate us to do the actual practice? So that will be the first one. The second point is the actual practice of cultivating of bodhicitta, meaning cultivation of loving kindness, compassion, empathy, and then that leads to enlightenment thought. And that is really the essential teaching of Lojong. Okay? The third one is transforming adverse condition into conducive. So that's what you're talking. The second one,
mm-hmm.
how to modify or transform this negativity into positive situations. So we'll talk about that. And then the fourth is how to integrate all of these teachings in our daily life, as well as how to integrate these teachings when we approach to death. So it's like bodhisattva form of power practice or thought transformation. And then point five is indicators of mind training, thought transformations. How would we know that we have improved our Lojong practice? Can you guess? I've mentioned it already today. Can you guess what is the measurement of whether we have already actualized Lojong practice or thought transformation? Can you guess? Yes?
My guess is whatever happens is okay.
Ah. Okay. Yes, that's one of them. What else?
Nothing attached.
Nothing attached? Yes, that's one of them. What else? Any other thoughts?
Not being anxious.
Not being anxious?
Yeah.
Okay, that's one of them. Yes? One? Any more?
Bus
Take
pass.
This. Hmm?
Bus pass.
Bus pass? Yeah. 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 Yes, bus pass. Uh-huh. Yes, what else?
Deconstructing a table.
Deconstructing table, yes.
Or a girlfriend.
Yeah, or boyfriend. So, actually, I want to clarify. I'm really not saying that we have to be detached or disconnect with anyone. Instead, actually, I encourage you to remain in your connection, your relationship, your friendship, but at the same time, learning how to cope with the clinging with issues, clinging with conflicts, and how to learn, let it go, and how to be flexible with the projects, activities, and become more flexible. And that is really the practice of non-attachment. Okay, so one of the main indicators is how much we have reduced clinging, how much we have reduced self-cherishing attitudes. Yes.
Does that, okay, so in some ways it means to me that having expectations, I somehow have to catch myself in having expectations. But
Yeah.
it's how I function in life, one
Right.
expectation to the next.
Right.
So I have a long way to
So
go.
I actually encourage you to have the expectation. I'm actually encouraging you to be attached and expect it. But at the same time, what is important is how much we get stuck with expectation, how much we get stuck. And that stagnation is what actually interferes us to grow.
So expectation is not the problem. It's not being resilient when it doesn't work out.
Yeah, how much we get stuck is really the problem, obstacle. Not having an attachment, not having even negative thoughts. Then how much we get stuck with our negative thoughts, like, oh, I shouldn't have this, how bad it is. Now we are getting stuck with negative things. Okay. So that's what it means. So as we continue, the indicators of Lojong practice is to watching how much we get stuck with ourself or self-cherishing attitudes or grasping and clinging, and how much we are able to free and reduce, be flexible. That's really what the sign of Lojong practice. Okay. All right. So the number six is teachings on making commitments towards Lojong practice. And the last is some essential advice to how to maintain Lojong practice in our life. And the very end, so there will be about 51 slogans, but 7 points. And the very end, and which is maybe one of my favorite one, it ends with a sentence that says, "No remorse, whatever happens now." So that's a great practice that shows great confidence, fearlessness, great stability. And so person says, now, even death comes now or tomorrow, I do not have any regret in terms of Dharma practice, in terms of making differences in life. And one is ready to go. Not like a suicidal plan, but natural. Yes.
One more question.
Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of a follow-up, perhaps, on Rio's question.
Mm-hmm.
I heard her asking it this way. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, my question then is it possible that there's some value in clinging to like positive experiences,
yes,
such as recognizing danger or practicing generosity?
Yes, yes. Yes, there is a positive side of the clinging and attachment, and that is to form attachment to positive qualities. Yes, for the training purpose. So first you form less attachment to negative, destructive things in our life or for others. And then secondly, you form attachment to positive qualities that we want to achieve in our life. Mm-hmm. But after that, then there's a advanced level where one feels so confident and so objective and so clear that both the positive and the negative are obstacles to bind us in our cycle. And so therefore, the third stage is basically able to see things, able to see our experience as it is. Okay, so it's not advanced, actually. You can start as it is practice from the beginning. But then you build for the training purpose. Of course, we don't want suffering, so we work how to reduce. We want happiness, so we find the sources of happiness. But then you go beyond from those two, and you reach really this stage where you are able to see that both the happiness and the suffering are equally interdependent and equally impermanent and equally changes. So therefore, they're actually both same. That is a true liberation. That is a true nirvana and enlightenment. But it may happen this moment, and that moment is really the moment of our liberation. So we're not expecting like continuing that kind of state. So we build like each moment this basically emptiness, basically genuine freedom. So if I give you some example, so people talk about how about forming attachment to your spiritual practice. So, or let's say certain Tibetan schools, Buddhist schools. For the beginning, for the training purpose, it might be helpful. But our goal is actually to go beyond from getting stuck with traditions, getting stuck with the systems, getting stuck with the political affiliations. Really go beyond from both the parties And there is a party that doesn't fit with two systems, so to speak. So our goal is, that's what I was sharing, going back to my fantasy of totally freeing myself. Maybe going to Alaska. People go to Alaska, right? And then make an offering to the brown bears.
So this is like an example. Like, it's what it made me think of is when I get something new,
yeah,
I barely want to use it. Like if it's a car, I don't even want it. My new shoes, I don't even want to. They're better when they're new.
Yeah.
I'm attached to their newness.
Yes.
Then they get a few scratches on them. I feel like I can go anywhere.
Mm.
Yeah? So at first there's an attachment until I see the impermanence, until the surface is scraped away.
So Peter, let me share you what Buddhist monastic practitioners do. So sometimes if you watch monk's robe, and if you see His Holiness Dalai Lama's wearing yellow robe, the outside, or sometimes this brown, this one, there's lots of patches, okay? And so the patches is purposely created. So there's this big cloth, I mean just flat, when it is fresh new, and cut into small pieces to reduce the attachment. And then put that small pieces and wear. So then others, idea is one may not form attachment to it, and others will not form attachment to this. So maybe scratch from the beginning. So others will not want your Harley Davidson, and you may not care very much. It's simply a transportation like that. But anyhow, and also, well, that's an example. Yes, Don.
No.
Actually, what it does is it helps to reduce our fantasies and honeymoon stage from the beginning. so then there is no kind of like really strongly attached to that. Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't want to delay the time anymore.
Yeah, that's okay. We usually stay until 8:45.
You first said, I was struck when you said about the practice of meditation is not to be for a healthy health or healthy
mind. I have to clarify that one. Okay. So at the beginning, you form an attachment to do meditation for a healthy life. So you start from there. And then you don't have to detach from forming healthy life. It will naturally go to that stage where actually now it becomes part of your life. And so you really will not have much attachment to it, to acquire. Because once it is there already. So again, what I mentioned earlier, those certain type of teaching is considered as advanced level. But at the beginning, we want to form attachment. We want to do meditation practices to have a better health, better life. And then, again, not to get stuck with that. Then it becomes form of attachment. And then continue your practice. Maybe this year, good health, physical health. maybe next time, good for well-being. And after that, then more broader costs, benefit for community and for the universe, like that. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. So continue. Anything else? Okay. All right. Yes, Don.
Okay.
I think you have an itch.
It's just so easy to form an attachment to ones that do everything right, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that gets in the way. I've had to develop a sense of humor accept hopelessness get over hoping things get better.
Uh-huh.
Hoping that things get better is an attachment.
Yeah, it's still... First, we need to form attachment. And then next step is then we release.
Yeah, I'm always judging, my meditation, I have 1 second of mindfulness and 29 minutes of planning my day, you know.
You are analytical.
I'm saying, well, that's a failure, but
yeah.
I gotta let go of that, huh?
Yeah. Well, but who knows? But who knows, you have only one moment out of 20. Maybe you think only one moment, but in reality, who knows?
Hey, that's a good one.
I think maybe next teachings we will bring this contemporary concept of self-compassion and self-kindness and gentleness. Maybe we'll include that part of our lojong practice. Okay, well...
And I don't want to scratch the motorcycle, okay? I'm just not there.
Yeah. Remember, I'll give you one example and then we'll end for today's. When we complete this, we have a fresh sign outside and someone... what do you call that?
Graffiti.
Put graffiti on it. And so that same as Peter, someone did something on your new bike. And so, but then I thought actually, instantly, I had this, I'm not making this up, I had this kind of humor. Well, our sign just says, come here. This is ready to put on some graffitis. Come here. So there's no fence, there's no electric, and it's inviting. Come here, put some graffiti on here. And that's what happened. Okay, all right. So I hope you have gained something from this. I almost canceled this because of my cold or my sinus, and I just started antibiotic, and then some of you know that that our mother actually. fell off from our bed and so took to the hospital, and now she's back. So I have all kinds of memories about how my teachers give teaching, and I have this great memory of my teachers, Kenpo Ape Rinpoche or Densho Rinpoche. They experience some physical related conditions. And they tend to think about benefiting others in spite of their physical conditions. So I thought I would try that today and see what happens. And so I really appreciate all my teachers who have inspired and encouraged to be at least helpful some degree, if not 100%, but at least some degree. So I hope you get something out of this and you reflect on once a while, and out of curiosity you test, like I test myself taking bus and see what happens. And then next time you come back, share with us what things you explore and test, see how it works with you. Okay, so with that, we'll do the dedication and we'll end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy your remaining summer.